We'll call the meeting to order. And to welcome everyone, thank you for coming all the way out here to Scotts Bluff. And we'll do introductions. Jim, you want to start?
I'm Jim Yurok, and I represent the American Interest in American Council of Blind in Nebraska on the board.
Julie Johnson, Chairperson of the Board of Commissioners from York, Nebraska.
Mike Hansen from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm the National Federation of the Blind representative.
Nancy Altman, and I'm from Hastings.
Kathy Stevens, I'm Administrative Assistant for the Commission from Lincoln.
Carlos Servan, Deputy Director for VR Services, Lincoln.
Bob Deaton, Deputy Director of Independent Living Services, Lincoln.
And Pearl Van Zandt, Executive Director, Lincoln.
And Dan Bird, I will be attempting to make this recording.
Thank you.
Where are you from, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Omaha, Nebraska.
Thank you.
No, that's not accurate. It's Portsmouth.
There are meeting agendas available in Braille and large print. I think everybody's got one. Okay, if not, they're available. There's also Braille and large print of the Open Meeting Act, which are the rules, of course, that we follow to conduct our meetings. Public comment rules. I think everybody knows the abridged version of public comment rules. We speak one at a time during public comment periods, which are set aside in the agenda. There is a microphone at a podium or table set aside for the speaker. I'll call on speakers so they can be recognized. If we have questions that can be answered by individuals from the public outside of public comment time, we may call on you, but it's only to speak on the question at hand. The next thing is proof of publication, and that's Kathy.
The notice of the meeting was published in the Lincoln Journal Star, the Star World, Scotts Bluff Star Herald, the Lincoln State Government Calendar, NCBVI website, NFB Newsline, Radio Talking Book, and it was sent to ACB and NFB, and it was also posted in the Star Herald news section.
May I ask a question? Mm-hmm. You didn't mention sending it to the NCBVI mail list.
It was sent to listserv as well.
Maybe you did say that.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
The meetings are recorded and will be made available on the NCBVI website within a week or two after the meetings. And also today, I think I covered in the public comment time, there is a microphone, and that is so that it can be recorded, not so that the people in the room can hear. Okay, lunch arrangements is going to be Jimmy John's, delivered here. Any other announcements from anyone? No other announcements?
All right.
Okay, so we'll move on to our first agenda item.
Do you want to read the agenda?
Oh, does anybody
want to do it?
Sure.
All right, today's agenda at 9 a.m., call to order, 9:10, approval of minutes, 9:15, focus topic, NCBVI personnel procedures for hiring and promotions. At 10:20, public comment, 10:40, break. 10:55, report from the chair. 11, report from the executive director. Then we get into our old business section. 11:20, budget update. 11:30, NFB Newsline update. 11:35, client assistance program complaints or issues. 11:40, Nebraska business enterprise update. 11:45, public comment. 12, lunch. Then we're into our new business section. 1:30, discuss and act on pay increase for executive director. 1:40, clarification of procedures surrounding travel arrangements for clients wishing to attend national consumer group conventions. 1:55, election of board positions. 2:00, public comment. 2:10, executive session. 2:25, announcement of announcement of next meeting. 2:30, final announcements. 2:35, adjournment.
Thank you. Okay, so our first agenda item is the approval of the May 5th and June 18th meeting minutes. May 5th was our regular quarterly meeting. The June 18th was an additional phone conference to approve the state plan, just for reference for individuals. So we need to approve those minutes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Do we need to do those separately, or can we do them together?
We can do them together as long as it's worded that way in the motion.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the both of those minutes.
Okay.
And I'll second that motion,
okay.
Excuse me.
Is there any discussion? Nope. Okay. We'll vote. Jim?
Yep.
I'll vote yes.
Yes.
Nancy? Yes.
Okay, we're good. I should also note that our fifth commissioner, Daryl Walla, was not able to come today. So, okay, that brings us to our focus topic, which is on personnel procedures. So do you want to start with that?
Sure. Okay. And normally we do send materials to you all beforehand. But I apologize that did not occur this time. However, it's not quite like, more of the service delivery kinds of topics that we often have.
And can I interrupt for half a second? I should say that a couple, I think it was right before a May meeting, I had requested a bunch of the personnel handbooks and policy guidelines from Dave Robinson. And I did finally get through all of that stuff, but I completely overlooked that those weren't sent to the whole board. So that's my oversight. I don't know if that was interesting stuff for you guys to read or not, but I did read it.
Good.
If you have those, in your email still, you could just forward those on. That'd be great. I know I'd like to at least see what was included.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, great. And I guess I'd like to see what he sent you also, if you include me.
Yeah, and there was like the labor contract and then the personnel handbook, and they were all just like public documents. Like,
okay. I have in front of me, pardon me, the personnel, where's the top of this thing? Sorry. Personnel rules and regulations that relate to, it's all rules and regulations relating to personnel issues, which can include holidays, hiring, promotions, discipline, anything related to personnel, benefits, all of that sort of thing. It's 150 pages or so.
Is that all?
So, wow. At any rate, what we do, we are a state agency, we're a commission, but we are within the Administrative Services Division of Personnel, and so we do abide by the personnel rules and regulations. I have two documents that go over our basic process, and so I'm just going to start going through that and then meld our own processes with what's required by state personnel along the way. The hiring for a position within the commission is accomplished as a result of either a resignation of an employee or the creation of a new position. Job announcements up until recently have been posted either internally only or internally and externally at the same time. A lot of times, and most of the time in the past, when there was a vacancy, we would be aware if a current employee that was qualified was interested in the position, and then we would advertise that position internally for a week, usually. And it usually resulted in that person being hired, because there are requirements in state rule that if an existing staff member is qualified and applies, then that person gets the job. So we did revisit that recently and decide there might be times we don't know that somebody's interested, and so we are going to start routinely offering it internally first. Then everybody does get the opportunity, everybody on current staff gets the opportunity to apply if they like. And that only delays the process about a week, and then we can, if no one is interested, then we can go ahead and post it externally as well. Let's see, and then we would post it on all the possible places, including the state website, most of those places that Kathy mentioned that we post our meeting information. We post with the consumer organizations have hiring lists of some sort, and there are others, and then some of us send it on to, say, if somebody's if people are a CRC, they might send it to their list, or different things that we share it further, we being all the staff, or even really the board and other consumers who might know about the job and know somebody off in some faraway state that's interested, and then they would send that on. Okay, what Dave does to advertise the job internally, I don't know if you want this kind of detail, but I'll go through it. He logs into Link, which is the new system for recruitment and selection, creates a job requisition. Once that's completed, it gets automatically forwarded to our personnel analyst at State Personnel. Once the analyst approves the requisition, it is forwarded to the recruiter that's designated for our agency and is then instantly released to the state jobs website for a minimum of 6 working days. This is an example of the requirements, the state rules and regs that we, this is a process that just has to happen. And
I quick question
yeah,
in that.
Sure.
Okay, so when Dave is, creating an account or whatever.
The requisition. Job requisition.
Is that like the description of the duties? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, that would be included there. I know there, you'd have pay rate, location of the position.
So that's the thing, the advertisement.
That's the job description.
The description, what people are looking at to decide if this is fits, right? That's what we're talking about. Okay. In the job description section, or the qualifications that the person needs, are there fixed criteria for all the jobs within the agency? So we're hiring a rehabilitation counselor. So is there a very fixed, specific set, this is what we always advertise for rehab counselor, this is what we always advertise for a secretary? or is that flexible? Does that change?
In other words, you're asking, does he create it each time?
Yes.
The description.
No, it
there's
would
no
be,
template.
It would be fixed, certainly for counselor positions. That is, there's language in the Rehab Act, so that comes clear from the feds down as to requirements that it has to be the highest in the state, and so that's prescribed. And then the state, of course, is the certified VR counselor for the blind, so that's prescribed, and so those things are in there. And since there's since we're in the focus topic, if it's all right, Julie, I'd like to, from time to time, ask Carlos and Bob to chime in on aspects of this. Can you think of anything else related to this part?
Yes. In general, we use the this.
I'm sorry. Yeah. In general, we use the same job descriptions, but as we evolve and we focus more on certain areas, like in VR counseling positions, we are trying to emphasize employment.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, we are adding language about experience on employment or ability to be assertive and dealing employment.
I guess my question is, if for some crazy reason, we'll pretend that all of a sudden, all the VR positions in the whole agency came vacant.
Mm-hmm.
Would the job description for a VR counselor in Lincoln, Omaha, Scottsbluff,
do they be the same?
Would
yes.
they be exactly the same?
Yes, except it will just mention that it's a different
location.
Location, yep.
Yes.
Okay.
So there is that template there.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Just a second, Bob. We'll get the
we need
mic,
the mic
to you. Remember, the mic is for the recording.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there are differences within districts. So the definition of distribution of labor might be determined a little bit differently. In some areas, counselors may have a heavier focus on transition. You know, VR counselors in particular. Or maybe they might have a more generic caseload. Or in some areas like here, for example, there have been times when there's a single counselor specifically in the office, they'll do a lot of home teaching as well as the employment-related activities. So, you know, that was a situation that existed in Kearney, too. So I think we have to kind of look at the needs of the service area being considered too, you know. But for the most part, at the time of application, the job description itself is posted will be very, very similar, if not identical.
Okay.
Thank you. If you'll just hold that for a second, Dan, I'll get the mic. Okay, so, and actually the job description often encompasses all of those things, and then when we drill down to the later processes, or the later steps of the process, then we'd be probably more likely to be talking about those aspects of it. Do you think is that accurate? Does? Okay. All right. And thanks for the question. Do keep... Everybody, let me know if there's things you want to know more about.
I do have very quickly. I assume when Dave creates a position and it's forwarded on to for approval and so on and so forth, has there ever been a time where the position has been created, it's been forwarded, and it hasn't been approved?
No.
I didn't think so.
There is a step that he doesn't really talk about in this, but that relates to the budget. First of all, internally... Well, even if it's a vacancy, especially when things are tight, we look at what is our PSL, that's personnel, I'm blanking that, it's our the state allow, within the state budget system, we're allowed a certain level of funding that we can spend on employees, on personnel. And so that's called the PSL. And so usually Bill and I look at that from the budget side and the PSL side. Carlos, Bob and I look at from the perspective of what's the level of referrals, what is the workload in the area, do we need to refill that position? And they, of course, are in touch with district supervisors on that as well. And recently this year, we've created a couple of new positions, the technology supervisor and the part-time in the center. Both of those, we had to do that internal checking, and then we had to also get permission from the governor's budget office. So that was another step besides state personnel that we had to do in order to do the job requisition. We first had to get it approved by budget as well as internal. So does that answer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mike.
Dr. Van Zandt, the one other quick question, and this is from just a few moments ago. When you were talking about once Dave has created the request within Link, that you actually talked about before a job were to be posted, which is all part of the Link process and all that stuff, but before a job would be posted for the public to see it, before it be advertised to the public and they could apply for it, that it's offered first internally. And you were talking about how you, in the past, you know, you kind of knew who might be interested and you talked to them, and now how you might change that a little bit just to open it up for everybody in the commission so that everybody is clearly knows what's available and so on and they can apply.
Yes.
Is that rule in state government that says that job needs to be offered internally first, does that apply to just our commission, or is that really applying to, it needs to be opened up for any state employee to apply for first before it is opened up to the public?
Let's see if I can remember that exactly. I think that it's not required to open it internally first, but that if there's an internal candidate, that's where we have to. No, I asked that same thing to Dave recently. I'm sorry, Mr. Hansen. I'm trying to remember exactly how he put it. Do you think I'm right? Kathy's good on this as well. That actually the state does not require the internal only first. It's more of a courtesy. So, okay, we're getting nodding heads, so I believe I'm correct. But let me finish. One other piece of what you said, though, Mike, relates to is it just for the commission or all state?
Right. What's the definition of internal?
Okay.
Is it state, all state employees, or is it just within the commission?
Just within the commission means opening internally.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay,
Julie?
That was what I was saying.
Okay, right. The part, what I thought you were saying is this a rule that only relates to the commission? And there's nothing we do that's just, it's all,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, it was really, when we open up internally, mm-hmm. should we be offering it to everybody in the state or just our own staff?
Right. Now, actually, there is another whole piece that isn't in these documents that I just got this last week. That is the state rehiring, there's a requirement for state agencies to, if someone has been laid off, then they are put into a pool. And we were blessed with Kathy Stevens through that process. That if there's a person who is in that layoff pool that does apply and is qualified, that we pretty much have to hire that person.
Okay.
And I also know there's a process about the people in the pool, and Kathy, remind me if this is right, that you are, any openings that you're qualified for, you an employee that's laid off. You're told about it, and you can apply or pass, and if you don't take it, then you're out of the pool or something?
Well, if you're laid off from state employment, you have to first sign up. You have to sign up to be in the pool. Mm. I mean, it's up to the person. Not if you're laid off, you're not automatically put in the pool.
Oh, okay.
You have to take the initiative and sign up to say, yes, I'm interested in being in this pool. Then if an available position comes open, then state personnel will call you and say, I have this position open. Sometimes it's like something that's, you know, lower than what you've had. They will never say, it will never be anything higher than what you had. But you can say, yeah, I'll apply, or no, I don't want to apply. But if you do apply for the position, and if you are offered the position, if you don't accept it, you're out of the pool.
Well, that makes okay. sense. Mm-hmm. That's the way it probably should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my question is, if they offer you this lower position, and you say right away, no, that's nothing I'd be interested in, then will they? I mean,
if you don't interview for it, if you say, if you just tell the state personnel that you want to wait, you don't want to apply for that position,
yeah,
then they'll keep you in the
pool. Yeah. Okay.
And Bob has a comment.
Sure, Bob.
I believe also the people.
Bob, please wait for the microphone.
Oh yeah, all right. I believe it's also true that people in the pool can specify that their interest is specific to certain areas of the state. So if they're living in Kearney, they may not wish to be considered for jobs, let's say in Omaha.
That's true. Yes. Thank you.
If you're in the pool and you get the job, you know, Kathy, like you did with the agency, do you retain your seniority with in state government?
Yes, you do. As long as you're reemployed within, I believe it's 2 years.
Is it two? I was thinking it was three, but
two. So after 2 years of unemployment with the state government, if you go back in from the pool, let's say it's year number three, you start over at the bottom.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so, let's see. So then, the job is posted. All interested applicants are required to fill out the electronic application through the state personnel website, not the state commission website.
Yep.
At that point, state personnel screens the applications for the minimum qualifications posted and forwards those applications that meet the minimum requirements to Dave Robinson. Then, as he receives them, he saves them to a folder. He forwards the electronic copies to the person or persons that are making up the hiring team for that position. Before it gets to that point, we have determined who will be on the hiring team, who will be the interview team. Sometimes we develop a tool for scoring the applications. Sometimes the scoring team is not the same as the interview team. For example, with the center position. The whole center team in the past, I guess we've done it a couple ways, but if the whole center team, for example, is going to be on doing the interviews, we don't need the whole center team to sit down and score the applications.
Mm-hmm.
I think this last time we had Dave, myself, and Fatosh scoring the applications. Then from that, we decided which of these 12 people will we interview. Let's say we interview five. Then the whole center team or whatever team is decided does that interview. For the technology position, we had myself, Carlos, and Jan Brandt, we wanted one person of the three technology specialists, and we drew a name out of a hat. Maybe it wasn't out of a hat, but we drew a name.
randomly selected, yeah.
And so it varies. When there's a person hired, say, in Omaha, typically they've had Carlos or Bob, Nancy Fleurl, and then they usually do a couple of people of the group. Dan says yes, he must know.
Wait,
one second.
Recently, when there's a VR position, they had a VR counselor for a orientation counselor, all the orientation counselors. When we had a position for the technology position, everybody was there, so okay. It varied.
Yeah. So really the point is that that part varies who will be on the interviewing team. For a long time, initially, 14 years ago when I became director, I was on every interview team. Then I felt like that was probably micromanaging, and I didn't need to be on every hiring team. So you've gone quite a while without me being involved, unless I directly supervise, or like with the center, I'm the next supervisor. That's something that I have thought about changing to. I may go back to being involved with all the hiring. I don't know. But that's something that we can do differently depending on what we think makes the most sense.
Well, I understand. It's hard because we're talking about a small agency with a lot of diversities and options.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I really would feel more comfortable if there was more consistency in, you know, if it was always executive director or deputy director, immediate supervisor, and two coworkers, you know, and then or some other similar arrangement. So we always had, you know, these are the people that are going to do the interview, and this other group of people is going to do the scoring. And I think it's I love the idea of a different group of people scoring the applications and a different group interviewing, because then I think you decrease, you know, any possible bias or tendency to overlook the obvious.
And to that point, has bias ever come up in the scoring process?
Well, we think not. The scoring tool is developed. And those are used consistently over the years. We usually review when a new orientation counselor position opens, for example. We typically will review that, we being probably Bob, Carlos, the supervisor, sometimes me, will kind of see, is this up to date? Is it still accurate for the world today, you know? And typically it is. So we have tools we've developed over the years that we consistently use. Same with the interview tool. We'll review that. We don't reinvent the wheel every time. We are consistent, Julie, about either, like you said, either myself and or one of the deputies, sometimes both of them. With the team, like with the center, they are all so closely involved. It's a program, you know, that's different than, say, North Platte District, where you have three different offices, a lot of land in between. So I actually feel like we are pretty consistent about the way we do it. It's not exactly the same every time, but we're still consistent. Now, let me just kind of finish the thought. The technology supervisor, we've never had a technology manager before. And so that was new. We did discuss whether to have all three, well, in this case, none of the three existing program specialists applied. So we could have had all three involved with the interview. We debated that, and then, of course, the deputies and myself, or the deputy, it was just Carlos, right? Okay. So, I don't know, we ended up feeling like it wasn't the best use of time to have all three, but that's something that could have gone both ways. So, you know, I think we're pretty consistent with how we do define the team. But I don't know, maybe if other people have thoughts on that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if Omaha District does their hiring, you know, one way and the center does theirs another way, I think that's fine because it meets the individual needs of that particular location. But I think from over time, you know, year mm-hmm. to year to year,
right.
how that location does their hiring needs to stay the same.
Right. And in general, I would say that's true. I know Bob has a comment. Over time, though, like I said recently, we did switch the way we did the... We tried something new with the center.
Mm-hmm.
We tried with one hiring, a recent hiring, to not have the whole team, but to draw a name and just have... I think it was two people, Mike and Jeff, along with myself and Satosh. I don't know that that worked that well. So... You know, I mean, I like consistency, but I think sometimes it's good to assess and see, does it still make sense to do it this way? Now, I agree with, I think, part of what you're saying. You shouldn't just flip-flop based on who you maybe don't want to be in the room at the time. We really don't do that. But we do try new approaches from time to time. And so, you know, and sometimes we find out, yeah, we better go back to the other way. I think Bob has a comment.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, I think part of the consideration looking at the process for the technology manager, for example, you know, we really had a potential interviewing team that was quite unwieldy, you know, if we included everybody that might have something to say about who would be desirable.
Right.
You know, and frankly, I was included in there, and I volunteered to step down because I was concerned that, you know, with too many people on the interviewing team, you really kind of set up a situation where it could be a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, too many.
You know, because I've been in interviews like that, you know, where... Well, yeah, like for instance, up in Minnesota, I applied for a job there, and there had to have been at least a dozen people there, and they all had their questions. So I think that's a consideration. I also think, too, you know, in some situations, especially with the field offices, you talk about teams within teams, you know. So if you have a vacancy, let's say, in Kearney, you may want to have somebody on the team that reflects the working environment there rather than someone from Scotts Bluff, okay? You know, so, you know, I think, you know, you select the team, the interviewing team that way. But I think, too, you know, however the selection is done, I think that what really makes it come together, you know, and make the process work as well as it does is the actual training, you know, the orientation center training. You know, I do believe that the agency itself, when you look at the staff, the consistency among the staff in terms of a shared training experience and philosophy on what we have for the blind should be. You know, that's not really determined in the selection process, but in the training that follows afterward. You know, so there's a kind of a mindset that developed as a result of that. You know, so I don't know, if there's that much inconsistency in the selection. I think maybe the team varies from time to time, but I think we have enough of a shared idea of what we want across the board that we know the characteristics of the employee. We know what we're looking for in applicants.
A comment, I guess. I think I'm comfortable with what's been said so far. Is, you know, the it sounds like there's processes that are in place that are, I'm going to say, I'm going to use the word generally, that are generally followed, and the only time they're not is when there has been some discussion about the process and, like, perhaps there's a way to do it better, a refinement that is tried.
Yes.
And in that case, then it's you guys do make an adaptation to see if that works better for you or not. But as long as there's none of that happening, and I'm sure the State Department personnel would agree that none of that's happening during the hiring process. Each applicant has to be treated absolutely 100% identically.
Yes.
Through the process.
Yes.
You can't decide halfway through, oh, we're going to change our interview questions, or we're going to change the panel, or whatever.
Right.
After you've done two interviews and you got three left.
Definitely. Definitely.
Were there more, Nancy or Jim, did you guys have questions about the current?
No.
We're good? Okay.
Okay, go on here. Dave, the scoring tool, we've talked a little bit about, it always has point values that are assigned ahead of time. There's a dozen or so criterion. Some of it's education, some of it's experience. And we do our scoring separately, send it to Dave. He tracks all the scoring. And then we look at and determine basically a cutoff. A lot of times there's several that from 3 to 8 that clump toward the top, and then quite often there's kind of a clear point where then there are a lot of people below. If it's close, let's say you've got people in the 30s and 40s of points that are clearly not, but then let's say you have 2 or 3 in the 60s, 2 or 3 in the 70s, and more in the 80s, then sometimes we'll end up interviewing more people because it's not a real clear cutoff point. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so that vary. We don't say, okay, above a certain number we interview, below it we don't. We always look at how the scores fall on each time and try to see if there's a clear breaking. And frequently what we do is we'll interview more people than we might prefer to interview just because the scores are more gradual in the differences. I hope that makes sense. I don't feel like I'm explaining it very well today, but so then we decide, okay, these are the cutoff. We call the people, sometimes Dave, sometimes the direct supervisor makes the phone call, and sets up the interview, well, offers an interview. But sometimes there are applicants who by then have already accepted a position, or maybe they applied and decided for whatever reason they don't want to proceed with an interview. Then we set up the interviews, and then we do the interview. We do really stick with exactly the questions, and making sure that the candidates understand what what's involved with the training, and we usually, after or before the interview, usually after, then we have the person tour the center. And so most times, even for jobs further west or even north, like Norfolk, the interviews would be held in Lincoln so that they can tour the center, and that includes some time, short cane travel lesson using sleep shades. So we can, for one, make sure the candidate knows what they're getting into here, and two, so we get an assessment of, you know, how did they respond to that. Of course, a one-time thing, you don't make a, but you can usually get a sense of if they're pretty open to, oh, okay, this is interesting, or if they have a really adverse reaction to using the shade. So it's a good way to get a feel for the person and for them to feel for us. And then the team discusses, agrees on a candidate, and then the person is offered the position. And Bill put together another document. I just want to look through and see if there's anything. This refers to the position description questionnaire, which I didn't really talk about yet, but that's the questionnaire that has to be completed that goes into a lot of specifics about the job if it's a new position or an upgrade. This is all pretty much, this is the same. So there's nothing else new that is. Let's see what else to say about the process. That's really the big picture. Are there, I guess before I ask if there are more questions, Carlos or Bob, is there anything else specific you think we should add? We've got some shaking of heads no.
Okay.
I guess I have a question,
yes.
And it's kind of a tangent, but while
okay.
I'm thinking about it,
uh-huh.
The center staff was doing their, what I want to say was called a desk audit.
Yes.
And last time we talked in May, they were still in the process of completing those. Where
yeah.
are we at with that?
They're still in the process of completing that.
Okay.
They have been, you know, I have informed them and communicated to them that they have the time to do it, that they, if they need time away from teaching, they just need to let us know and schedule it. So I don't know.
Okay.
But that isn't something that's required if they choose to proceed with it. It's, we're trying to support them. I'm trying to support them in any way needed. If they do choose to pursue it, you know, if they choose not to, that's okay too.
Right.
So I don't know.
Well, I think
I haven't heard.
I think that was something that came out of the survey last year, and there were several
yeah.
requests. So
right.
I'm making the leap that meant they were at least interested. I mean, maybe things have changed since that initial
sure.
interest.
No, they definitely were interested. They were very much, I don't know about all of them, but definitely at least some of center staff were definitely interested in that.
Is that something that they need to do as a group, or is it an individual? How, I didn't think about that.
It can be either, and each can do, but their positions are the same level.
Okay.
They have different focus areas, but I guess I encourage them to put their own thought into it, but then also to make sure it was consistent with the group. But that doesn't mean, let's say, if one person didn't care about it, that would hold the other four
well,
back.
I'm just thinking that if two or three from the center proceeded with it, got theirs approved, then they were classified as a different, as a specialist or whatever the thinking is. Are they all going to be reclassified, or just the ones that?
I think it is important that a position description questionnaire goes through with the request, that it would encompass all of the jobs there, no. all of the mm-hmm. The different teachers, the orientation counselors.
Okay.
So it, I mean, it wouldn't be such a thing that one person would get theirs in and approved and be above the other people.
Okay. That's what I was trying to figure
yeah.
out, because that would
yeah.
be a really...
No, that would not... I would certainly not endorse that in any... If somebody... I mean, every state employee has the right to do their own, basically, request for a desk audit. Every single one of everybody but me has the right to do that. And it would go to the supervisor and me... not necessarily for approval, but certainly we need to know what's out there. State personnel looks at the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now there is one piece about it related to whether it's a staff request or an agency request. And Carlos, can you remind me what the difference was in terms of how state personnel, in one sense, they're required to look at every other agency. So explain that piece, if you would.
Sure. The employer request or the agency request, if the employee writes the PDQ and the supervisor and the director, in this case, put a request what kind of classification they're recommending. Counseling 2, counselor 1, or program specialist, whatever we think fits there. When it's employee request, the employee has to come up with a classification. In other words, the employee needs to look at what other job in the state is similar to his or her, and why he or she is asking for that particular classification, believing that he or she is doing the same kind of job and should be classified like the other either agencies, employees, or maybe within the same agency. Any questions about that? Or I'm trying to make it short.
Yeah, no, you explained it well, I think. Did that make sense
mm-hmm.
to you guys?
Yeah.
Thanks, Carlos.
Madam Chair,
uh-huh.
Make one more comment that when we were preparing to leave Lincoln yesterday, I did have an opportunity to speak to a couple of the staff members in the center, and a comment was made that they just recently made a change to scheduling a little bit, and it sounded like they have to create a day, I think it was once a month, in which they have an office day.
Yes.
Dedicated to allowing them to do some paperwork and to get some other things accomplished that where they didn't have any distractions of having to teach that day
mm-hmm.
and so on. And actually yesterday was the first instance of that.
Yes.
So there has been some changes made that hopefully if they were struggling to find some time that perhaps this will assist them in getting that done also.
Mm-hmm. Other questions, comments about the current subtopic? Okay. I think we're good to move forward.
I wonder if we didn't talk about promotions, and I do think that was part of the concern on
mm-hmm.
the survey, so if you don't mind, let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
Let's see. Of course, again, we go by all of the required processes that we've already talked about. Let's see. I would say that the only, or a bone of contention recently related to the location of a supervisor position, for example, so we might as well address it since it is a concern of some folks. With what we do in general is to identify where the location of the position is going to be, and we say that ahead of time. Like the program manager for technology needs to be in Lincoln. They need to be able to connect with all of the three districts. They also, there will be work related to state government, state office of the central information officer, other things that are more central, that need to be in our central office. And so that is how we posted it, and that is how it evolved. The North Platte District Office supervisor, we posted it as requiring that it will be in North Platte. And my original intent is that, thinking that physically that's in the middle of the district, it made more sense if that position were located in the North Platte office itself. When we had the candidates, and we had one candidate who was our strongest candidate, who we did then hire, Sarah Stewart, she didn't bring that in to start with. I mean, I think she did ask Bob or Carlos, do you suppose it could be, I could be located in Kearney if I were the best candidate? And they, I don't know exactly, they said, well, our plan is for North Platte, you know. And you guys correct me if I'm stating this wrongly. But basically then, you know, she interviewed based on the job and her skills and her ideas about leadership, not based on location. She was the strongest candidate. We were impressed with her. And then she provided to us basically a rationale for why it made a lot of sense that she would be located in Kearney. And so basically she convinced us. And there are a lot of times that North Platte District Supervisor has to come into Lincoln for meetings, so less time is taken away from that. As far as being physically in North Platte, most of the time the folks in all three offices are out on the road anyway, so she's out on the road, you know, they aren't sitting in North Platte with their supervisor. I don't know if there's anything else that I'm not mentioning, but basically, and she showed a real commitment to, she totally understood she needs to be out in her whole district with her staff, with the staff that work in the North Platte District, and assuring quality service throughout, and so on. So she provided a really good rationale, and we said, okay. Carlos, Bob, any other comments on that?
Sure, just one more comment that she mentioned.
She also make a good case saying that she could supervise with the new tools that we all are familiar with, like the computer, emails, internet, or the iPhone. So basically wherever she is or the counselors are, they can communicate. That's very much.
Thank you. And eForce, since it's all electronic now. Yes, thank you for mentioning that. Bob, did you have anything to add? Okay. So, you know, it's true we didn't let everybody in the North Platte District know, or in the whole state for that matter. Yes, you can be wherever you want. But the top candidate, presented us with a very strong rationale. And I think she's clear, you know, if it really is not working, she either needs to fix whatever, and Bob and Carlos will be working with her closely to to make sure it does work, or we'll switch it, you know, so.
Right.
Could, just for my reference, could you review how many people we have in each office, what the distribution sure. of the staff is? There's been a lot of changes.
There have
lately.
Been a lot of changes.
So just to make sure I'm not confused.
Yes, I'll be glad to do that. And then also with, like I said earlier, when we do look at staffing, we really look at referrals and caseloads and all of that. We look very closely at that. Dottie does research. Bob and Carlos go through it. We discuss it. So, yeah, right now, what we have in Scotts Bluff, there is a rehab counselor who also does teaching as well. There is a voc rehab tech, and she can do, she's office support. She also can do intake and basic work with clients. Then in North Platte, we have an orientation counselor and a voc rehab tech. In physically in the Kearney office, we have the district supervisor who also does is a voc rehab counselor, so she does can do the VR work over in more of the North Platte area. There's a voc rehab counselor. There is a program, a technology program specialist, and then there is the older blind program specialist. Did I get everybody in Kearney?
Four then? Four
five,
people?
It's
four. Program specialist, supervisor, voc rehab counselor, and older blind.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. I know, I had to. then Norfolk, which now is in Lincoln District. In Norfolk, we have physically located there the personnel officer, although he also comes to Lincoln when need be. There's a voc rehab counselor, and there's an orientation counselor.
Sorry.
And no technique, no voc rehab for voc tech.
Thank you, and a voc rehab tech.
Oh, there, okay.
Yes.
That's
four. and then... The bigger offices are a little harder for me to remember, but we'll go to Lincoln next because that's part. Lincoln and Norfolk are one district. So there's a, just in terms of Lincoln district staff, not counting the center or administration, okay? We've got a voc rehab tech, a program technology specialist, a district supervisor who also is VR counselor. Two VR counselors, or three VR counselors, and two orientation counselors. Then in Omaha, and we're doing field staff, so we'll go to Omaha next. A program specialist, a voc rehab tech.
The program specialist, again, is a technology.
Technology,
program.
Thank
yes,
you.
Right.
Yes. Supervisor, who is also a VR counselor. Are there two orientation counselors or three?
Three now, if the one that's full time.
Okay, and then two or three voc counselor. Rehab.
There's also the state funded older blind.
Right, but she's basically an orientation counselor, right?
More or less.
Yeah, we're not talking about the funding, but yeah, she's more specific to senior blind fund. Yeah. Dan's probably nice.
It is two, Chad and...
We're not saying anything.
I'm sorry.
There's three, we have counseled and four OC.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
The blind coordination.
Thank you. Okay, so that's all the field staff. Does that answer what you're...
Yes.
You want me to then talk about NBE and the center and administration? Or do you mainly ask about...
I don't think...
I mean, it's important, but it's not...
Right. But for your question, I have, think it had more to do with the field.
Right. And I know there had been a lot of change. So, and the current plan is to keep it staffed the way it is, or are there going to be positions filled in any of those places?
Current plan is to keep it the way it is.
Okay.
It seems to be working really quite well.
And Julie, I think that's the trend, not just with the agency, but I think just in general. You know, when the recession hit in 2008 and the housing market and all this, companies have found a way to do a lot more with less. Not saying that that's a good thing or a bad thing, that's just the way it is, and I think it's a reality.
Well, but I think they've, you know, my understanding is that really looked at the distribution, where are the people we need to...
Right, no, I agree.
That we need to be working with. And
I agree.
Rearrange our staff so that...
Oh, no, I agree.
That's an appropriate client-to-staff ratio.
Dr. Van Zandt addressed that earlier, saying that when positions become available,
right,
when somebody, for instance, leaves, they go through a reevaluation process, looking at, on the administration side, budgetarily, do we have money to fill that position? And then also on the field side, does it make sense to refill that position with the way that our client caseload is being distributed at this point?
Right.
Have we a reduction or an increase in clients in that area, which would justify either not filling that position again
I agree. You just don't want to have a position to have one. You're right. But
right.
That's just, you know, the way it is.
Yep.
So it sounds like that's being reevaluated each time.
We really do. Comes
up. Mm-hmm.
So I guess there's 5 minutes left. That was the only other thing I wanted to address. Anything else? So.
Did we talk about promotions? Did we get sidetracked?
I thought I was talking about promotions.
We touched on it briefly.
Based on...
to me, a promotion, what we're talking about as a promotion, is a promote from within. So if there was an orientation counselor that wanted to apply for a vacant VR counselor position...
No, those are parallel. Those are the same level.
Okay, so Evoke Rehab Tech wanted to apply for a Evoke Rehab Counselor position. That the positions were being opened internally... and they can apply for it, and therefore that was what we're considering a promotion.
Right.
Okay.
Where I went to with the issue about promotions was the tech manager and the North Platte District Supervisor. So that's what I was talking about there. Those were both opened internally.
And I understand, you know, where you're coming. Over the past 5 years, reading of those staff surveys, it's something that has been a recurrent theme. There's not a high volume, but it's something that's consistently there. From my perspective, we're talking about a small agency with a lot of parallel positions.
We're pretty flat. We're a very flat organization. And can I just go to? I don't know. I don't mean to cut off your question, but The truth is, we don't have supervisor positions open very often.
No.
And even the counselor positions, which OC, VR, field, and center are all at the same level, the only positions really, you'd say, under those for whom that would be a promotion would be the Voc Rehab Techs. And... typically, there's education required, or, you know, and then our supervisors, we've had people in at least Lincoln and Omaha, well, in all of the supervisor positions were a long time, the deputies, long time, you know, Bob has a comment, but my point is there isn't a lot of turnover in, you know, that would lead itself to promotions.
Right.
And that may be part of the nature of the agency itself, not are we fair about promotions. Bob?
It just occurred to me as you were discussing things, We did have a situation where the orientation counselor retired, and we had interest in a voc rehab counselor wanted to switch and become an orientation counselor. Rather than open up the position and rather than applying for that position, the voc rehab counselor's position was just simply reclassified. And then the position of VR counselor rather than orientation counselor was open. Okay. So when you have that kind of a parallel shift, you know, you don't necessarily open up the application process. We can do that without opening up. We can do that without posting the position internally or externally. We'll just reclassify, and then the position that ultimately is left open is what we will post.
And I think my comment was pretty close to what you're saying. I think okay. It's just people, there's just some general frustration that there's not a lot of word, you know, opportunities. And there's just
right.
not. Because
there just aren't.
Yeah, and I think which, it's just the nature of the agency, not any particular...
Right, which in some ways is a good thing that we are a flat organization. But on the other hand, there's disadvantages, too. Kathy wanted to.
Sure. I think one of the things is that a lot of staff don't understand the personnel process. And so, like, I might say, like, with my position, like, I'm currently Administrative Assistant 1. Mm-hmm. I might be sitting here thinking, I really wish they'd promote me to a 2.
Okay.
You know? And that's not something that management can just come up to me
maybe
one day and say, we think you should be a 2.
Right.
No. It had to be something that I would have to do, and I'd have to take the initiative, have personnel evaluate my position, do a desk audit. And so a lot of people don't understand the process,
right.
And so that's why they're thinking, God, I've been here for so long, they don't promote me to a 2.
Two things come to mind on that, and then we can... Number one, that might be a good thing for state staff to make people aware of it, you know, think about that. Number two, I can guarantee you that when Carlos and Bob and all of those that have been with the agency for umpteen years leave, there's going to be an issue.
Sure.
As far as trying to fill.
Yeah, and you got your baby boomer going there. I mean...
Well, yeah, exactly right.
Potentially, but I've really kind of talked with most staff, and at least for 5 years, I think we're okay. But sure, the potential is there that we might have a huge turnover.
Or it could be a mass
at some
exodus.
Point. And I think actually a lot of
fleeing the Titanic.
Agencies and businesses have that as an issue. Education, that's an issue. Anyway, so good points. Good points.
More questions before we move on? Everybody's good?
Okay.
Good. Okay. We'll conclude the focus topic.
Thank you.
And move into public comment. So this would be general comments, questions, concerns, stories you'd like to share about anything related to the agency.
I have one.
Sure.
All right. This seems like a good time to throw this in.
For the record, for the tape, would you say?
Sure. This is Mike Hansen, board member. I have been speaking to somebody the other day about how we decide where our meetings are held. And I think that in the discussion I had with that person, there was a consensus that, you know, we do need to be flexible and move our meetings around the state to accommodate people the way we do today. There's no disagreement there at all. There was a desire to, if there was some way that we could come up with and to change how we decide where these meetings are held, so that we're where the people want us to be. You know, if there's a desire for a group in Chattering, you know, to, for us to be, and that we would try to accommodate them and make sure that we have a meeting there at some point during the year to accommodate them and so on, so that we're not making, this is a perfect example today, we're not making trips to Scotts Bluff from Lincoln and Omaha and having and bringing all of our, you know, and not having anybody from the public here. I don't, you know, so I guess I would just, as a board member, be very interested if anyone has any comments or suggestions that we could maybe just take under advisement and consideration, whether they have those today or if they, you know, have them in the future, they have a brainstorm, that I personally would be very interested in hearing what they have to say so that we could discuss that on the board and possibly make some changes to how we choose the locations that we're going to.
Bob Eaton? Well, I assume this is still public comment, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my suggestion
and
is...
Could you identify yourself for the table?
Oh, I think I did.
You did.
Bob Eaton. Yeah. My suggestion is you take a look at the more active consumers out there, and I think we know who they are. You know, they live across the state. Instead of looking at the places we traditionally go, you know, maybe go to the home communities of where the active clients are. Like in this part of the state, you know, maybe contacting, I can think of a couple of people that would have been good to contact and said, if we came to your town, do you think you could get some people to the meeting? And I'm sure that the response would be yes, you know. And so at least that way we could generate some public participation there. That's my suggestion.
I guess my comment is the board, at least me personally, I have no idea where the really active clients are located. The board has no knowledge of individual clients,
okay,
what they're doing, where they're at, none of that. So I have no problem, you know, I think that's a good idea, but that I don't see how that could be initiated by the board.
Well, I think it could. You know, you have two members on your board that are AACB representatives and the NFB representative, and I'm sure that both of them would have suggestions as to who could be contacted in different parts
maybe
of the state.
One point I want to make is it wouldn't necessarily have to be clients,
okay,
but active consumers.
That
interest in from people who care about services for the blind and visually impaired.
Right, because
that's what I meant.
Very different.
Okay. Yes,
clients is a very different
yes,
thing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. No, I said consumers. But in any case, I also wanted to comment too. Some of the people on the board are speaking rather low, and while I'm able to follow what you're saying, it is a bit of a struggle. So maybe if you could just project a little bit.
I will try.
Yeah, and we'll try to remember to always bring our actual mini microphone. We didn't have it this time.
Thank you.
Dan is saying we can turn it up, but it's not really a projection.
No, I think
Dan provided a mic.
Yeah. Dan, this is a mic for the room.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, let's turn
so
that up.
So maybe we
please.
Can give that to Julie.
Yeah. It's right in front of
us. Yeah. All right. But everybody project a little bit. Thank
yeah,
you, Bob.
That's fine.
And I certainly agree with those comments from Hansen and Deaton. Make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Definitely.
I agree with it. I think that, you know, Mike and I can, you know, talk to folks and provide suggestions perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know.
I would still, I mean, even, I just from the experiences that I've had within the National Federation of the Blind and just as somebody who lives in eastern Nebraska, just as a Nebraskan, have heard so many comments over the years that, you know, about from people in the western part of the state about, you know, they're ignored, you know, that they should be their own state, they, you know, they're, you know, you know, the big communities are Lincoln and Omaha on the eastern side. So even if, and I guess where I'm going is if even if we do contact the consumers and they all said, you know, we'd really like you to come to Norfolk, and we really want you to be in Omaha, and we really want you to be in Lincoln, and we want you to be in, I don't know, Beatrice, you know, wherever, Hastings, whatever it is. I still think that I would be very uncomfortable if we never, if at least one of our meetings throughout the year was not at least as far west as Kearney. You know, I think we should, North Platte might even be a better dividing line.
I agree.
That even if we have one meeting that we come out at least that far, if nobody shows up, you know, we have made that effort,
right.
That we're here.
Yeah.
Nobody can come to us and say, we didn't try.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, that's one of the things, when I first came on the board, we had another commissioner who was on the board who absolutely refused to go past Lincoln. And I won't mention his name, but the argument that I brought was, if you want to do that, then we need to change our name to the Eastern Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And so ever since I've been on the board, at least after that first year, and Julie can vouch for this, we've come, you know, at least as far as North Platte.
Yeah.
And once here in Scotts Bluff a couple, 3 years ago, and the room was jammed.
Yeah.
It was jammed.
I have two real quick things, and then I think we'll talk about break. Mike and Jim, if you guys, between now and November at our next meeting, if you two could talk to your peoples and get a list of suggested towns, then we'll talk about it in November.
That's fine.
And make a plan for next year.
That's fine.
And then Jim mentioned, due to our recent discombobulation with the November meeting scheduling, to, in the future, not this year, but in the future, when we're scheduling for next year's meetings, to do our Lincoln and Omaha meetings reversed.
And let me explain the rationale. Go ahead.
Well, okay, I was going
to
explain
go
it.
Go ahead, that's fine. That's fine. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Because if we did our Omaha meeting in November and Lincoln in February, we wouldn't have to be concerned with whether it's a home game and if there's going to be a lot of traffic and, you know, those kinds of considerations.
Good idea.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
We're all good with that. Okay.
Yep. That's fine.
It's a done deal.
Okay.
So in November, when we schedule for next year, don't let me forget that.
No.
Okay.
Any more public comments? No? Okay. Well, then let's take a 10-minute break.
10:31.
Cool. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the report from the chairperson. I don't know what to report. There hasn't been a lot in between. I guess we had the additional meeting for the state plan, reviewed state plan, all that materials. I reviewed all of the personnel policy items for today's focus topic. And I really can't think of anything else that I've worked on board-related. All the typical stuff, administrative scheduling and all that kind of stuff. Were there anything that the other board members would like to add, activities that you've done since the last meeting?
Yeah, I can add a couple of things. Interestingly enough, I had a chance to actually visit on phone with three separate people in my area that basically were interested in different things that blind people do. One thing was sewing, and another was just, another person was very just interested in blind people in general, and these people all already are receiving services from the commission. But, you know, we're just in need of talking to another individual who was blind. And so I visited with them. And then also I attended the National Convention of the NFB at Dallas. And just a couple of interesting things. Travelocity and Southwest Airlines are upgrading their web pages so that they're going to be more accessible to blind people, which I thought, boy, this is great. I like that idea because some of that stuff is kind of a nightmare to get through, and I really appreciate they do that. and a couple of interesting things about new, quote-unquote, new technology. Something I think they're talking, they're saying it's called a talking TV, which means that it will have like a screen reading on the screen. So if something's on the screen, it, you know, you'll be able to read that, and also that your remote control will be totally functional. Now, I have no idea what those things cost, but they're already using this kind of stuff in England, which I thought was interesting. And I'm, you know, interested, and they're looking for a manufacturer here in the United States, and they think it's going to be Panasonic. And the other piece was from Dean Blasey. He's got a new device. It isn't out yet, but I think they're going to call it Braille to Go, and it'll do everything but, you know, jump through hoops. It'll be smaller, less buttons, you know, very user-friendly, supposedly, all these different things. And he's really thinking about adding cell phone device to it also. But it sounded interesting, and his personal idea was to make it very simple and yet be cost-effective, and he wouldn't commit to a price, but he's saying in the $2,500 price range, which I thought, you know, that's a whole lot better than $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 that, you know, a lot of note-takers, that kind of thing, are these days. So those were some of the highlights from the NFB convention.
Question? Nancy, and you might not have all the answers to this, but just a quick question about the talking TV you mentioned.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that that would, of course, you know, help with, like, you know, all the newer TVs. You know, they've gotten rid of a lot of the knobs and buttons and or things on the TV itself, so to program it, you got it's going to help in that regard. But also, is this going to help with things like when we have a national weather alert, or when we have a weather alert in the area, and there's a scrolling thing at the bottom of the TV that we don't have access to because it's not audible?
I'm assuming it's going to, because what it said, what he actually said was it's going to have screen reading capability. So I'm assuming that's something that's written on the screen, so you're going to have access. You know how they, see, in my mind, and this might not be the case, but in my mind, when they start scrolling, they usually go beep, 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 and then you know something's scrolling. You know, you can't see what it is, but you can hear the beep, 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 and then you'll have something on your remote or whatever will be able to access. And now that's what I'm assuming. He didn't give all the particulars. He just, one of the things he said that they've had it for a while already in England. And he said they're just looking for a manufacturer here in the United States. And I have no idea about cost. Sorry, Jim.
No, that's fine. I didn't mean to. That's not my understanding. When he was at the ACB National Convention, what I got out of it was that it's referring to the set-top box on your TV as far as being able to program that.
With your remote.
Exactly.
But I don't know. Maybe I misunderstood, but I thought he said screen reading.
Which would be in the set-top
capabilities.
Box, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll have to find out some more information about it.
Other activities other board members have participated in?
Very quickly, I'll make it quick. I did, like Nancy, I went to the National Convention, the American Council of the Blind. And somehow found myself getting elected to their Low Vision Special Interest Affiliate, the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International. I kind of jokingly told the president that since he wasn't going to run anymore, I said, you know, I had to run for you know, just see what happens. Next thing I know, I get elected, and there you are. So that teaches me to keep my mouth shut.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah. So anyway, that's all I've got. I did, for the record, miss the 18th of June board call because of the passing of my father. And other than that, I've been doing nothing.
I've been continuing to work some on the on updating the commissioner information packet. We've gotten some information from some outside sources that I've been waiting on, and Nancy, she didn't mention it, but she's been helping me a lot with that in looking through old minutes and finding some information that is good for all of us and especially new commissioners to know about, and we're getting that incorporated in. And you know, just kind of a, some of this has been kind of snowballing a little bit, just little tangent projects that come into it. Like I had asked Pearl the other day to forward me any information she had on the history of the commission, and so it was really interesting. She had several documents for me that we were able to merge together, and I think we have a written history now as it is from about 1880 something through the mid 90s.
How we doing?
You just said 18?
Yes.
Oh wow.
Well, I didn't even know
through
that.
The mid 90s.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, that we didn't really have a commission until about 1913, or we didn't have services of any kind formalized in the state of Nebraska until about 1913. But that they talked a little bit about how other states were doing things as early as 1880s and stuff. So there's some comments back there on how things were being done. So it's interesting, and you know, that was just kind of a little side tangent project that came out of this. So we can make that available for everybody too.
I'd be very excited to hear that.
And it would be great at some point. I know Pearl made this comment that if we could if we find somebody who might be interested in doing it or to take it on or whatever, but to bring that that written history up to date from the mid 90s or late 90s where it currently ends to present day.
And we really appreciate the commissioners' work that you're all doing in the background. It's good stuff. Those are things that it's hard to find the time to do, but it's really important.
Okay. I think so, too. Mm-hmm. It's interesting reading of the old minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really is interesting, the meetings that I did not attend.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys.
Sure.
For all your hard work, it's not anything one person can do.
Right.
So good. All right. Well, I think we'll move on to our next item on the agenda, which is report from the executive director.
Very good. Thank you. As always, I will go through some of the highlights. I won't. I'll have a more complete written report in the minutes. I do want to announce our honoree of the Governor's Employee of the Year Award this fall will be Cheryl Poff. She's our Senior Blind Orientation Counselor in Omaha, started as our Deaf Blind Coordinator when we had the Helen Keller Project, has moved on to working with a broader population. But she's just a tremendous resource, especially with regard to people who have deafness along with their visual impairment and who have other multiple disabilities or are seniors. She's a great resource, so she will be honored this year. We are continuing to work on the follow-up with the monitoring review corrective action plan as well as the submitted state plan. I did receive a thing from RSA with changes they want us to make in the state plan, and I need to send that. I'll be sending that to all of you next week. Some of the changes are kind of minor wording issues. Others we probably will look to the TACE Center in Missouri to have some technical support on some of it. The statewide needs assessment process is, you know, they talk quite a bit. I think you'll recall in both state plan stuff as well as the monitoring review about the needs for us to have a formal, systematic statewide our comprehensive needs assessment. We do it on an ongoing basis by getting out around the state and assessing the needs of people, but it isn't the formalized process. So we may very well need to go ahead and contract for next year to have one done. anyway, and there are other pieces of that, so we're working on that. We did get appointment to the Tri-County Workforce Investment Board. Nancy Floral will be on the board now representing the agency, and that was one of the points from the monitoring review that we needed to fix. I did tour the new facility in the new location in Omaha. It was still under construction, but it's really going to be a good resource, and we haven't seen the exact proposal yet for what it will cost, but we do plan to co-locate one or two days a week and have one or two of our counselors physically in the workforce center. So that we're hopeful that'll really help us get out to more potential clients who might not have heard about us otherwise. We're working a great deal with details for a cost allocation plan, which will fulfill aspects of the monitoring and the audit reviews related to equitable distribution of our indirect costs, so that we aren't just putting everything to the Voc Rehab Basic Support Grant, but parts of it are in the Older Blind and Independent Living Grant. At the same time, making sure that we're adequately providing the services that are needed. So part of the work is on the budget level, and part of it is more in service delivery level. At first, it looked like we were going to have to just really decrease the amount of time that counselors spent with independent living or older clients. We still will need to pull that back a certain amount, but we also have done some checking with other agencies to see how they manage all of this, and what we're going to start doing is all referrals, regardless of age, will at the referral level be considered Voc Rehab, or that is the basic support grant. And so we've always said that we encourage all clients, all applicants, to expand their personal expectations, to look at employment, not to think that they can't work because they're a certain age or because they're blind, but to definitely encourage all visually impaired Nebraskans to look at the employment, to have employment goals. And so this actually even more formalizes that and helps out with our time frame of time spent on independent living. Now, that's just referral status. So once a new referral has been fully informed of what the agency does, what the resources are, we go through kind of a litany of things available to people. Then if they decide to apply for services, then they can either apply for a vocational rehabilitation plan with an employment goal, or for independent living plan. Or, of course, they can decide not to apply for services, too. But we have already implemented that, and just recently have started that. So I think that'll be a good thing philosophically, as well as in terms of managing the time people can spend for all the grants. Let's see, biennium budget proposal is in the works. We had a draft narrative had to be into the system, which basically we plugged in the previous one, or the one we're currently in, and then I've gone through the narrative part to update, not finalize, of course, it's just the draft to get the basics in there and see if there was anything major that should change. So that is all in the works. Of course, as we develop and get a little further, those documents will all be coming to the board for your consideration. Let's see, and so that's in process. I've begun spending half days with staff members. I've spent half days in the past quarter with 10 individuals from North Platte, Lincoln, and Omaha offices. And then I spent 1 hour on a new employee orientation that was done. And then I've been attending some meetings, client staffings in the center, meetings with district offices, well, with Lincoln District and with the center on the motivational interviewing training that they've had. So that's been really interesting. Kathy and I made a chart of all the state employees where I log the date that I spend time with people so that I don't forget anybody. And over time, I just, you know, continually work at putting that into my annual schedule. Let's see. I did attend the National Federation of the Blind Annual Convention in Dallas. And this is the first year since 98 that I did not attend both conferences, except for in 2000 when we became a commission, and I did not attend either because we made the formal switch July 1, and there were a lot of logistical things I had to take care of. But other than that year, I've always gone to both. For the future, we'll see how funding is. If funding is tight, I'll alternate which meeting I go to, or I suppose if it's really tight, then potentially I wouldn't attend. But I think it worked all right this year, although it would have been nice to be at both. Let's see. We do have the new supervisor, Sarah Stewart, in the North Platte District, and Wes Majerus is technology manager. He'll be in Lincoln. They're attending training for first-time supervisors and another thing called Emergenetics that has to do with building a team and working with people's strengths, and looks like it'll be a pretty nice opportunity for those folks. Let's see. Working on strategies to maximize the counselor time, and really that whole process has involved all of the staff of thinking through how can we best do that, and I think the deputy directors have really done a good job with communicating with all the staff to get input, attending office meetings, having discussion about how can we best do all of this. So we try. In the past quarter, we filled two positions in the center, and then one of those resigned yesterday. Alex Castillo is the new apartment resource counselor. He did complete his training and began his actual position this past week. And Jane McGee was hired for the part-time position, which is new. Well, I guess it isn't entirely new because we did have a diabetic alternatives person for some years. The new part-time person has been redefined, I should say. It won't be mainly diabetic alternatives, but it'll be kind of a hybrid of that, along with providing support for all of the different class areas. We're having increasing numbers of people with multiple disabilities and language issues and other reasons that they need more attention, more one-on-one support, and so the part-time person will, you know, really help with those things. Jane was hired and then resigned. She's going to be working for Lincoln Public Schools. So actually, I think she'll be a real good advocate for us. She'll be a substitute teacher. But anyway, so we were sorry to see her leave. Let's see. Then in our center. We now are at the point where 88.5% of our clients that have completed their training and schooling do achieve their employment goals. Only 9.1% are not working. And actually, that's lower. Last quarter, it was 9.6% not achieving their employment goal. So we're pleased about that. Center activities, they went to